Owens, Overeyes. Please be seated.
Yes, Ms. Rees.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, earlier this morning, it was raised by my learned friend, Mr. Rice, KC, for Queensland Health, that the second statement of Alicia Quatermain had not been disclosed. Of course, on behalf of the Commission, I apologise for that omission, which appears to have been a technical difficulty. I understand now that copies have both been emailed to the parties and also provided in hard copy, and I've spoken with each of my learned friends who are content to proceed.
All right, good. Do you want to tender it?
Yes.
Exhibit 62.
Thank you. Commissioner, if I could return and ask the operator to place on the screen the spreadsheet which was referred to earlier in Ms. Quatermain's evidence, that's WIT.0012.0026.008. I understand a redaction has occurred or will occur now, just over some identifying or remotely identifying features. Ms. Quatermain, is this the spreadsheet that you created of some recent examples of DFP samples which you subjected to further processing at your own instigation?
Yes, no DNA detected samples and DNA insufficient for further processing samples.
All right, so this is the this is a mixture of both?
Yes.
And on the screen there, and you've got that copy at exhibit two to your first statement, and you can see it on the screen there. Can you explain the information that you've presented in that table?
So I have barcodes of samples, the priority of the case associated with those samples, the initial quant value, the quant value after the sample was microconned, if it was microconned. If there was an available quant, the results of those samples once they were processed, and then the description of the profile that was obtained.
All right. And in the case priority type where you've got P2, P1, you list next to them the actual type of offence that was being investigated.
That's correct.
And that includes murder and rape, wounding, robbery, willful damage.
That's correct.
And in these cases, at the end, you say the potential intelligence or interpretation possible.
Yes.
What do you mean by that? What does that column refer to?
So that refers to whether either we obtained a usable DNA profile or we obtained a DNA profile that may have been reported back to police as partial DNA profile that was unsuitable for comparison purposes but may actually be able to be used by us to do comparisons if requested by police, and that's usually for high priority cases.
And in those no DNA detected results which occur in that top part of the spreadsheet, that top section.
Yes.
Where you've got in that far right column Y, N, N, that sort of thing.
Yes.
That demonstrates that there was mixed success in the further processing of those samples.
That's correct.
And can you explain then under the DNA insufficient for further processing, where again the case types include those more serious offences, why does each of the entries under potential intelligence or interpretation possible say not available or not applicable?
So either I categorise them as yes, there was potential intelligence interpretation possible, or no, there wasn't, or NA. In this case, NA is because all of those samples that were DNA insufficient for further processing resulted in an interpretable DNA profile that was reported back to police or could be reported back to police. The intelligence that I refer to in that final column is if sometimes we can't actually do an interpretation that can be reported back as such, but for intelligence purpose, for intelligence purposes, we can do an intelligence interpretation for police, but that's outside of the normal scope of our work. It's a special request that can come from police if it's a high priority case.
So, in fact, where I asked you before about success, is it fair to say the true metric of the success is under the description of the profile obtained under that column?
The description of the profile, yes.
That's where it's evident that profiles were able to be obtained from those samples?
Yes. So if you look at, there's a column titled Final Interpretation.
Yes.
So, for example, CMPU stands for Complex Mixed Profile Unsuitable for Interpretation. So those ones haven't been able to be compared and will unlikely be able to be compared to a reference sample. But the SS stands for single source, or if there's a 2P mix, 3P mix, those ones are interpretable. The PU is what I was referring to earlier with partial unsuitable, which means I don't have a reportable result that I can give back to police to match a reference sample, but there is information present within that profile that could be used for intelligence purposes if required and requested by QPS.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Quartermain.
Sorry, could we have that back again? This spreadsheet of yours might illustrate something that we've only dealt with in abstract terms until now. If you look at the bottom set of numbers, the DNA insufficient for further processing numbers in the bottom half of the page, you can see one of the columns has initial quant value and the next one has quant value after microquant. You see that?
Yes.
So the initial quant value is as it came from analytical, and that's why it went into 5P.
Correct.
And then on your initiative, microconcentration took place, and you have the liquid is distilled, so you have a greater concentration of DNA in the sample, correct?
Correct.
So if we look at the third sample, which reads robbery, we see that we've gone from 0.0066, which is within the range 001 to 0008.
Correct.
And with microconcentration, the new quant, that is, is now obtained in the sample, which should go on to amplification.
Yes.
It's 0.022.
Correct.
And am I right in saying that that is above the range?
Yes.
So now you've got, by microconcentration, you've converted a low quant value into a quant value within the ordinary range that the lab routinely processes fully, correct?
That's correct.
Thanks.
Inherent in this spreadsheet and some of the other evidence that you've given is the fact that you've requested for some samples to be reworked or subjected to further processing.
Yes.
In your statement, you do outline some issues in relation to the process around reworks of samples. And I understand your evidence to be that there might be two different situations, one where a sample is initially reported as DIFP, and that can be reworked without permission. Is that the case?
That's correct.
And that, again, though, that does require reporting scientists to decide to do that.
That's correct.
And the second is somewhat different. And can you explain that second category of reworking to the commission, both what it relates to and how you go about seeking permission to rework?
So the process has changed since the Commission of Inquiry started, but do you mean what were you required to do now?
What you were required to do as of 2019.
So if we were wanting to request a sample to be reworked and It was previously reported back to police as DNA insufficient for further processing or no DNA detected. We could process those samples further, although that wasn't well known amongst the reporting scientists right up until the end of last year. People were still requesting through the appropriate channels to rework those samples when they didn't need to. If a final result has been reported back to police, as in not DIFP or no DNA detected, but say a two-person mixed DNA profile, and I look at that and I think, oh, I think that sample requires additional work, I would like to amplify that sample again, I would have to request that permission through the managing scientist for her to authorise us or authorise me to carry out that further work.
And if I can take you to paragraph 106 of your statement, which is at page 18 of the online version. That really sets out a procedure from the procedure for case management version, which is extracted there.
Yes.
Creates a structure by which you have to seek endorsement from your team leader prior to going to the managing scientist?
Yes. I've only ever used this process once or twice. And what I did was at the time, this authority is done through MS Teams. So within MS Teams, we have a certain number of channels that we use within reporting. And one of the channels has this form that you fill out the details and send it through. I think it does go to the team leader before being forwarded on to Kathy. And I think Justin looks at it, checks to see what's being requested, and then forwards that on to the managing scientist being Kathy.
And that process, you raise some concerns about that process in your statement. Can you explain what your concerns are to the Commissioner?
My concerns are when I have used this process, I don't get a timely response. Often it can be a week or longer, and if I've got a deadline for a statement to be due because court's upcoming, I expect that if I put that information in my request that it will be turned around promptly, but often I have to chase that up in order to meet the deadline for court to get my result processed in time to get it reviewed, then put it in the statement in order to get it to court in time. So we have had concerns in the past, not just myself but other reporting scientists, about the turnaround time associated with being authorised to carry out reworks that we think are necessary for a case that we're working on and for a statement that we're working on.
Spoken in your statement about the potential for this process to act as a deterrent to reporting scientists asking for reworks. Is that your view?
Yes.
And what do you understand the criteria to be for getting permission to do a rework?
Well, as the reporting scientist, I would first look at a sample that I wanted to rework. I'd probably approach my reviewer as the person who's reviewing my statement to confirm that they agree that a rework would be necessary, so I have a second opinion before I proceed further. And then I would request that rework through this Teams process. Often the times that I've done this, which hasn't been many, I've followed it up with an email to say that I have submitted a Teams form and there's some urgency around a response, please, because I want to make sure that I meet the court deadline. But it does seem to be that even bringing that up as something that needs to be dealt with sooner rather than later can still take longer than I think should be necessary. And that's one of the reasons why I feel that people, including myself, try and steer away from having to rework samples at statement stage because we have to go that extra step to get that extra permission and authority, even if we think that that's the best scientific thing to do for that case.
the reality of a rework at that stage is that it could change the result that's ultimately reported, couldn't it?
It could change the result, yes.
And that's dealt with within the lab as an incorrect, which is then communicated to police by an intelligence report?
That's correct, yes.
And in some cases it might have the impact that a result which was acted upon by QPS changes at the report stage.
Yes.
And do you understand anything of those aspects of the criteria that are being applied? Do you understand on what basis Ms. Allen is either accepting or rejecting these applications?
No.
Ms. Quartermain, yes. You just so I understand it, you are we're speaking about a rework in the context in which you are about to prepare a witness statement, and you look at the data and the results, and you form a view that a particular sample ought to be reworked. Can you give me an example of the reasons that would lead you to that view?
An example would be if a result had been reported back to police as complex unsuitable.
Yes.
Effectively meaning we haven't done any comparisons of that sample to anything else in the case. But if I look at that sample and I think, as it currently stands, yes, it may be complex unsuitable because it's a low-level profile. However, if I were to microcon that sample to full, I might get a nice two-person or three-person mixture, mixed DNA profile that could be used for comparison purposes. So I don't want to report this as complex unsuitable. I want to do that further work to see whether I can get a better profile for that sample for the case.
Yes. Now, so according to the procedure that you're required to follow, you first need to you fill in a form, and will it say to the effect what you've said to me now?
Yes.
So that goes to the team leader, who was relevantly Mr. Howes, was it? So he looks at it and approves it or doesn't approve it, or endorses it, doesn't endorse it. And then if he endorses it, he hands it on to the managing scientist, who then approves it or doesn't approve it.
My understanding, yes.
And so three people have to check it, you and those two, and you said you showed it to your peer, your anticipated peer reviewer to make sure you're not wasting everyone's time. So
yes.
Four people look at it. And all right, thanks.
Quartermain, we've spoken briefly before about the fact that in September of this year you spoke with Inspector Dave Neville of the QPS DNA Management Unit. Had you ever spoken with him before?
No.
Do you have much contact with QPS as part of your work?
No, only if I'm contacting a police officer about something to do with the case, but other than that, not the DNA management area. Sometimes we have to contact the results management section if we're wanting to get some of our results acknowledged so we can release a statement. But when it comes to actually contacting QPS, like police officers, not really.
And why did you speak with Inspector Neville? What was your, why did you speak to him?
I had concerns over the auto microcon process to 35 microliters. The example that I stated before about if you've got a mid-range quant, say 0.004, and it's from a sexual assault kit and you've seen sperm, so you're expecting to see some male DNA, and that sample's microcon to 35 and you get a partial DNA profile with two people in it, you've effectively got 20 microliters left over to get the same result twice. My concern was that samples weren't being assessed on a sample-by-sample basis, which I thought was the best way to look at these samples, because samples at the lower end of that quant range and samples at the upper end of that quant range, and depending on the sample type, should be looked at and assessed separately and differently.
And you're aware now that after speaking with you, he in fact wrote to Queensland Health asking for certain action to be taken, aren't you?
Yes.
And that has in itself led to a further change to process in the lab. I'm sorry to jump around a little like this, Ms. Quartermain. In your statement, you do refer to a concept of turnaround times within the lab. Can you explain to the Commissioner what turnaround times are in relation to the processing of samples?
So turnaround times could be best described from when the sample is received at the laboratory until a result is reported back to the police. My understanding of how the actual metric that is used to determine the turnaround times by which we're assessed within reporting and within DNA is when a cold link is reported back to police after a DNA profile has been uploaded to NSID. So I have asked Kathy about this before, about why we use such a small sample set to determine our turnaround time when we have lots of other samples that are processed and reported back every day, including links to known reference samples for a case, which will never be cold links, they will be warm links. And the only metric we're using is generating a DNA profile, uploading it to the database. If it links to a known person or crime scene on the database, reporting that back to police, that amount of time is what I understand our turnaround time to be. That's what we're gauged by.
And for example, this is a matter which you discussed with Ms. Allen in a chain of emails, which are exhibit one to your first statement. That's WIT. Yes, thank you. So if you, Mr. Operator, if you scroll down to the second page. Page of that email. Again, unfortunately, the copy on the screen is not
Which page of?
Page three of Exhibit AQ1, Commissioner. Ms. Quartermain, I won't get you to go back through the lengthy exchange that you have with Ms. Allen at this point, but this is an exchange in December of 2020 where you're essentially questioning the wisdom of the turnaround times as you just described them.
I just didn't understand why we were using such a small proportion of our samples to determine our turnaround time when the vast majority of our samples, especially priority two samples, major crime, have reference samples. So the majority of those will never have a cold link associated to them. So effectively, our turnaround time was being judged by the majority of the time, priority three samples that were obtaining a usable DNA profile that was uploaded to NSID and resulted in a cold link.
What role do you perceive turnaround times to play on the functioning of the lab?
Turnaround times, well, for the staff, when we receive an email from Justin or Kathy mentioning turnaround times, it gives us an indication of how well we are or aren't doing when it comes to outputting information back to police and whether it's being done in a timely manner. And sometimes it does make us feel as though, because the majority of the work and the bottleneck can sit with the reporting teams, because our end of the process can be quite time consuming, we often feel like it's a turnaround time associated with the reporters, which can sometimes have a detrimental effect on morale.
So the chemistry work that the analytical section does, well, that, I suppose, in general, takes a certain amount of time that you can quantify. That moves like a machine, and in general, you can predict how long the process will take from receipt of sample to the point of the electropherogram being produced by the genetic analyzer. What you're saying is that the point at which you and your colleagues as interpreters, the point of time from which you receive the electropherogram to the point at which you can offer an opinion and upload it to the forensic register, that's variable because it depends upon the quality of the profile that you receive and its nature, and also whether, as you described, you might want a rework done or some working done. So then by that means you've extended the time that it will take to return a result to police because you've added a duplication of the earlier steps for the reasons you've explained. So your the time that you and your colleagues take can't be assessed in advance. It varies depending upon the sample that you're considering and the number of samples you're considering, I suppose.
That's correct, yes.
Now, thanks for that. So the other thing is that on that email that we have on the screen at the moment, I see that I take it that this is a response from Ms. Allen to you dealing with your question, why turnaround times are being measured by reference to the time within which a sample is received, between the time, I'll start again, is measured by reference to the time period beginning when the sample is received and ending with the a result from the national database linking the that profile to a profile on the national database. And you're asking, why does that make sense? And you're getting this response.
Yes.
Now, if we look at that paragraph.
Sorry. I should have made it clear to you, Commissioner, that there are two further pages which take two steps back in that email communication. I should have taken Ms. Quatermain to them.
No, it's all right. I just want to ask her about this. So in this paragraph at the top of page 0012, 0026, 0003, she observes that the measure is the receipt to cold link metric, because this is where DNA analysis performed by the lab is most useful to them in solving crime. And that by contrast, for most major crime cases, they usually have a suspect and DNA analysis results are essentially confirming the scene that they have processed. So we're most useful to them when we're able to solve crimes that they haven't been able to solve in other ways. So did you understand that she was putting that really the key thing that you were doing of importance was when you could to produce a cold link from the national database, but that warm links were less useful because it was just confirmation that the view that they had with the suspect that they had in mind was correct. Did you ever discuss that with Ms. Allen, that analysis of, or that view of the real usefulness of the DNA lab to police?
I don't know if we verbally had a conversation about it. I think most of our communication was via email around this.
Mm.
It was important for me to understand it, and sometimes I need to sit down and actually read it a few times to get my head around it. And it was also important for me to be able to pass this information on to my team because we were all wondering the same thing.
Yeah.
It's ironic, actually, because we are told that priority two samples are our highest priority samples and we should be focusing our time and attention on those, and priority three aren't as high. But if police and QPS are using cold link turnaround time or cold link, the cold link metric to generate our turnaround times, then we're essentially not prioritizing the samples that are affecting our turnaround times. That was how I always saw it. We've never been told to sit on the priority three work list and review samples that are being uploaded to NSIS.
What you're saying is if this is correct, if the most important work you're doing is the cold link, the work that leads to a cold link, then the volume crime is the most important work.
Well, that would make sense because that would decrease our turnaround.
Although some of the major crime has some of the major crime samples involve crimes for which police have no suspect.
Correct.
An unknown killer, an unknown rapist.
Correct.
But volume crime in general is crime where they don't have a suspect because it's a break and enter and they've got a blood stain or a saliva stain on a cigarette butt or something of that kind. Yes, I see. Thanks. Because it appears to conform to the reasoning in the options paper, doesn't it? That the real thing, that the real thing of value in the range between 1 and 8 is where you get a cold link, and that's 1.46% or 1.45%. And the 10% isn't so important because their results, to use the language of the email, essentially confirm the scene that the police have processed. They've got a known suspect, and it really doesn't tell them anything they didn't know. Thanks. I didn't see the significance of that until now.
Ms. Quatermain, when you spoke of turnaround times in your statement at paragraph 34, you were speaking of your view as a long-term employee, as a reporting scientist. What in your view, the main drivers were for removing the microcon concentration process? Can you tell the Commission what you believe they were?
The reduction in spend, financial, and time, because our time would be able to be spent on case managing and reviewing other results that were had a higher quantum could be interpreted.
So that might have budgetary but also turnaround time implications?
Yes.
And you understand from your experience that the microcon step is a costly one?
I don't know how much it costs, but I know it's an additional cost step in the process.
Just finally, Ms. Quatermain, in your second statement, you speak about your perception, your experience of the cultural issues within the lab. This is from paragraph 15 onwards of your second statement, which is WIT.0012-0028.0003. And you've set out a number of matters of concern there, or matters which you say are cultural issues in your workplace. I wonder if, as you sit here now, you can tell the Commissioner, when you talk about cultural issues or the culture in the lab, what is it that you're concerned about?
I'm concerned that I feel that there's division within the laboratory, and that affects how cohesively we work together. And we should all be working together, because our goal is to be producing the best DNA profiles that we can to output and report back to police. So I feel like if I have an issue like the one I raised with Justin, and I raise it to my line manager, and I'm like, this is a big problem. Like, I'm seeing things that we need to do something about this. This doesn't sit right with me. I raise that to my line manager. Kylie says, I agree. We need to do something about this. We've been noticing that more and more samples are giving good DNA profiles that fall within the DIFP range. I support you approaching Justin. And then I approach Justin, and I feel like that's where it stops. I can't, even though something that is important to me and scientifically should be important to everybody in the laboratory, appears to not be so important to him. And so therefore I feel like things that should be taken very seriously aren't taken as seriously as they should be. And then I wonder what the motive for that is. Why isn't he as concerned about this as I am? We want to try and get the best DNA profiles that we can for the community, for police. And for some reason, I'm not allowed to do what I want to do with these samples. And it's that division that creates that division. And the flow on of that is that I know that if I take something to Justin, I don't get his support, then why continue to take things to Justin?
The division that you're speaking of there, as I understand it, is the division between you as a scientist and those in a position to act on your concerns.
Yes.
Yeah. You've spoken of a difficulty or an impasse, essentially, in a relationship with your line manager or your relevant manager. Can you describe how you say the culture of the lab should work in terms of raising scientific issues?
I believe that science is an area that requires people to question it. I think before you make a scientific decision about something, you put your thoughts to a group of people who know as much, if not more, than you do about what that issue is, and ask them to challenge you. If you're not challenged and get that idea picked apart right from the start, then you won't come to a robust conclusion. You won't come to a robust decision to move forward with an idea. So I feel like in science, that's what we should be doing, putting ideas to people who know more than us or as much as us, and ask them to pick it apart so that in the future, decisions that have been made historically aren't of a concern. You can just reassess or reevaluate if new technology comes into play or something like that.
And the contrast, as I take it, is what you experience in your own lab.
Yes.
How can you explain the contrasting position?
So project work that's undertaken within the laboratory is sort of undertaken just within the department that is primarily affected by that project. When I feel like projects, as they come up and are being discussed and a project plan is being developed, that would be a great time to give that project plan information to the rest of the laboratory, including operational staff or quality staff and people in all different areas, to read the project plan and come up with ways to improve it, come up with things that could go wrong with it, so that when you have a project sign off at the end, it's had that scrutiny from people within the scientific community that you know are good scientists, you work with them every day, and they will want to do what they can as well to have the best scientific outcome possible.
How do you experience raising concerns within the lab? How do you feel they are responded to?
I feel that it comes down to that division that we spoke about earlier, that I can raise something that I think is a legitimate concern to my line manager, and I wouldn't if I didn't think it was. If I think something needs to be dealt with and taken further, I will raise it to my line manager. And if it's a good idea and a good point, I expect that I'll get support from my line manager to take it further. But it's when it reaches that next person that often things stop, as opposed to getting support from that person or sitting down and having a conversation around why that person thinks, no, this doesn't need to proceed further. I don't think that that happens as much as what it should. And it's sort of being knocked back over coming up with good ideas that you just are sort of discouraged from approaching people with your good ideas.
How does that make you feel as an employee of that organisation?
It makes me feel like I've been here for 17 years. I like my job. I enjoy what I do. I want to do what I'm doing to the best of my ability. And when I have people who stop me from being able to do that, it becomes a problem for me, because then I feel like I'm not doing the best that I can do in my job. I'm not being allowed to do the best that I can do in my job.
You've also told the Commission through a statement that this community feel like you're not trusted.
It can do, yes.
And that there is a high level of control that's exerted over employees of the lab.
Yes.
Can you explain that?
So there is control exerted in areas that I don't think is necessary. For example, if I want to call in sick to work for whatever reason, I need to call in between 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. And that gets, if people start calling outside of those hours, we start getting reminder emails. Please ensure that you call within these hours. We can't start in reporting. We can't start work prior to 7 a.m. when every other department in forensic DNA analysis can. There have been various reasons provided over time, which I don't think any of them are legitimate, but it is what it is for now, and that hasn't changed. Our stationery cupboards are locked. So even though...
Sorry, what did you say?
Our stationery cupboards are locked.
Yeah.
So I need a science degree and a police chair to get my job. Then I need a pass to access campus, but then I need to approach an administrative assistant to unlock a cupboard for me to access stationery. It's just that feeling of not being trusted, that we're here trying to do the best that we can for the community and police and for ourselves, knowing that we're putting out the best scientific work that we can, but we're not being trusted.
You're not allowed to start work before 7 a.m., you said.
That's correct.
And why is it important to be able to start work before 7 a.m.?
Well, some of us in reporting have children who attend schools, so if we were able to start, say, at 6:15, we could finish at 2:21 and be able to pick our children up from school.
Mm.
But if the earliest we can start is 7 a.m., the earliest we can finish is 3:06, which puts us all out of... But none of us have the opportunity to pick our children up from school.
I see. Thanks.
And you've been given some explanations for that flexibility before. Can you tell the Commissioner what you've been told is the rationale for that lack of flexibility?
With respect to starting prior to 7 a.m., the most recent reason I was given was in a flexible work arrangement that I applied for, and it detailed... fatigue management. So if I was to start work at 6 and then I got a phone call from court at midday to say I was going to be required at 4:30 in the afternoon, that the potential is that I may not give my best evidence at 4:30 in the afternoon because I've been working since 6.
For an additional hour.
Correct.
Courts don't sit at 4:30. Anyway.
And are those the types of things that inform the way you perceive your workplace culture? Commissioner, that's the evidence in chief of Ms. Quartermain.
Yes. Just before one of the others of you rises, I just want to ask you three things, Ms. Quartermain. In the course of, say, dealing with an issue like being dissatisfied with label, the label attached to the DIFP label that's being attached, what contact did you have with other laboratories in terms of asking other labs what they do in similar circumstances?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I didn't have any.
And in general, in the scope of your work over 17 years, what intercourse does the Queensland lab have with its lab with its fellow labs in other states? Do you know?
My understanding is that potentially, based on different scientific groups that Justin and Kathy are part of, they have some interaction with some of the other states' laboratories. But generally, especially within reporting, I don't know of any reporting scientists that routinely have contact with any other state laboratories.
Oh, I see. So you don't, you and your colleagues don't, as a matter of routine, ring your colleagues in Melbourne or Adelaide to ask them about issues that have arisen in a scientist-to-scientist way?
Wouldn't even know how to do it. I've previously asked, now this was quite a few years ago, so I am going by memory, but I have asked Kathy for details of a certain scientist in another laboratory to be able to ask a question around that. But generally, no, we don't have any contact with other laboratories or other laboratory scientists.
So what's the reason for that?
Well, I would have to say other than it's not been a common thing for us, so I wouldn't really know where to start with that. But everything is so high time pressure that reading journal articles or doing anything outside of the scope of your normal day-to-day work is almost viewed like you're not doing the core work that should be done. So I kind of put that in that same parcel, that it's something outside of the core work that I'm required to do, and therefore it would be viewed as not required in your day-to-day work. Therefore, why are you undertaking that?
What about then on another subject, what about professional conferences? I know that there was a conference in Brisbane a month ago dealing with your profession. Do you and your colleagues attend such conferences routinely over the course of a year? Okay. Is there any funding for you to attend those conferences?
We accrue professional development leave, and professional development allowance is paid to us fortnightly that we can accrue over time to attend conferences. Mm. And there are some things that people will attend around management or report writing, things like that. But other than ANSFIS being the conference that's just happened, there's not really anyone that I know of that attends anything outside of those particular types of things.
Mm. And what's the allowance? How much is the allowance a fortnight, do you know?
I couldn't tell you offhand. It's not a lot. It might be $70, $50, something in that vicinity. I could check and get back to you if you wanted
to. Right. And then you may have answered this, but within implicitly in what you've said, but within the lab, are there any professional development programs, or are there any procedures in place for the scientists to inform each other by way of internal seminars? Are there any processes in place for you to develop yourselves professionally by getting added qualifications? Are there any exchanges with other labs that are available?
Not really. I mean, we could take it upon ourselves to, like I said before, about, like, say, attending a course outside of work or within work hours that we thought was relevant and get approval to do that. But I don't really know of anybody who does that. I don't remember the last time I heard of somebody doing that.
Mm-hmm. What about? It doesn't matter. Yes, that's it.
Thank you.
Yes. Who's next then? Yes.
A couple of
yes, Mr. Hunter.
A brief question, Ms. Quartermain, I for the Queensland Police Service. You're taken to an email that you sent to Justin Howes on the 29th of April 2021, expressing some concern about the DIFP process. That wasn't the first time you'd raised that, though, was it? And you had raised it at least as early as March 2019. Does that
The email I raised to Justin before April of 2021 was April of 2020.
We please have Mr. Waldridge FSS.0001.0051.5008, please. It will need some redaction of email addresses.
What exhibit number is that? Or is it an exhibit?
It's not an exhibit, right. 21 statement. It's... If we could then scroll down the page, please. Just the bottom half of the page that I'm interested in. Do you see that that's an email that was sent by you to Kylie Rika on the 7th of March 2019 concerning DNA insufficient for further processing?
We'd better redact the case number in the second
yes,
line
please.
Of the email at the top.
Yes,
there.
Please.
That's it. Thank you.
I can't see the date, but I can see that it's an email that I sent to Kylie.
Just scroll up a bit. 7 March 2019
yes.
at 5:27.
Yes.
And you in that email expressed concern to Kylie that Because some samples that were P1 had been automatically micro-concentrated, they developed usable profiles that would have been missed if they'd been sent through the normal P2 workflow.
Do you mind if I just read that, please?
Please do, sorry.
Yes.
So as at March of 2019, you were alerted, Ms. Rica, but you also CC'd Mr. Howes, Alison Lloyd and Sharon Johnston.
Yes.
Who is Alison Lloyd?
She's one of the HP5 scientists at work. So at the time, I think she was acting in a HP5 position, so the equivalent level of Kylie and Sharon.
So you're explaining that some low quant samples had been auto-microcon because they were P1.
Yes.
And they'd resulted in usable profiles.
Yes.
But had they been through any other workflow, they would have been simply reported as DIFP.
Yes, unless I guess at statement stage we picked up on that and reworked them further then.
You then, in the second paragraph, talk about a CSP discussion. What's that?
Yes, it's like a career progression discussion.
Right. You'd obviously had such a discussion not long beforehand.
Must have, yes.
You then observe that your customers are not just QPS but also the courts, the complainants, the defendants and the general community.
Yes.
And you suggest that they that the range for DIFP should be reassessed.
Yes.
And you suggested that potentially what should happen is that P2 samples should go back into the auto microcon workflow.
Yes.
Then you go on to say you sign your statements in good faith, and of course you recognise that the jurat that appears at the end of your statement talks about being liable for prosecution if you say anything you know is false.
Yes.
You then express the view that at least as early as March 2019, that you thought saying DIFP for a quant value at the top of the low quant range was false.
Yes.
And you suggest that there needs to be a change or at the very least a team discussion about it.
Yes.
And you say that although there might have been an agreement with QPS, surely the topic can be revisited and the yes. agreement modified.
Yes.
And you thought it was the lab's responsibility to provide the QPS with guidance around these things.
Yes.
Right? Now, you sent that to Kylie, but also, as I say, you CC'd Mr. Howes and others.
Yes.
Did you get a response?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Well, what we do know is that if we go to the very top, we know that it was passed on to Paula Brizzotto simply with an FYI. Do you recall speaking to Ms. Brizzotto about it?
No. Oh. Well, Justin hasn't CC'd me in on that, FYI, so okay. No.
Was this the first time you put finger to keyboard, if I can use that expression, about this issue?
I don't know. I feel like there's been that many discussions and emails back and forth over time that I couldn't tell you when the first time was that I probably brought this up.
Now, when you recently spoke to Inspector Neville, you'd never spoken to him before.
No, well, not that I remember ever speaking to him.
So reaching out to contact him was a pretty significant thing for you to do?
In my opinion, yes.
And you did that because you were concerned that automatically microconcentrating to a fixed level of 35 microliters was potentially going to lead to important evidence being missed?
Processing of samples in a way that wasn't ideal for that particular sample.
With the consequence that evidence could be missed?
Well, it could be not missed. I would probably say it could be the determination between getting a usable DNA profile and getting a DNA profile that was not usable.
I'm not sure if that email has been tendered.
Well, tender it. Exhibit 63.
Those are the only questions I have. Thank you.
So just to get it clear, Ms. Quarterman, if you don't concentrate a sample that ought to be concentrated, then you are potentially destroying evidence. That is, you're using up DNA that, if it had not been used up in that way, could have been part of the concentration process to arrive at a sufficiently high quant to generate a usable profile. So to that extent, you're destroying a part of the evidence unnecessarily.
Are you referring to, say, if after extraction we've got 90 microliters and then amp at 15, then we're effectively removing 15 microliters from the available leftover sample that could be microconed?
When it's a low quant that on any view deserves to be concentrated before being amplified?
Yes.
Yes. Who's next?
Just a few things by way of clarification, Ms. Quartermain. Firstly, your longer statement, that's exhibit 61. If I could just ask you about page 6 of that, if that could be brought up, Mr. Operator.
It's the second statement, Mr. Operator.
The first one?
Yes. And which paragraph?
Page 6, paragraph 36 and 37.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask you about paragraph 37. Can we take it that what you've said there in those two sentences is a position statement, that is to say where you stand on this subject?
That's my belief as a scientist, yes.
Okay. As it reads, the second sentence might suggest that someone has put to you as a proposition with which you disagree that turnaround times are more important than outputting high-quality results. Is it right that no one has actually said that to you, but rather that's a statement of where you stand?
Well, that email before from Kathy states that our turnaround times are generated from a metric that is based on ColdLink. Mm. So if we're talking about turnaround times that the QPS are considering from that metric versus turnaround times in general, turnaround times are important, but I wouldn't want to have decreased turnaround time in order to just get results out the door faster.
Well, okay, but my question was that no one has actually put to you that turnaround times are more important than quality results.
No one has specifically said those words to me, no.
As that page progresses down through paragraphs 38 to 40, you give some comment concerning the decision of 19 August. If we look at paragraph 40, second sentence of that reads, samples should be assessed on a sample-by-sample basis to determine the best reworking strategy. In the context there, I take it that you, by using the word reworking, are including whether and how to micro-concentrate?
Yes.
Okay. Do you accept that, as things stand at the laboratory, there is a deficiency in the assessment process that you refer to, in as much as the laboratory has never done a study on the relative merits of concentration to one level as opposed to another? Data of that kind's never been obtained?
I don't know if it has or not, I'm sorry.
Well, you'd be aware of it if it hadn't been, wouldn't you?
Potentially not. There's a lot of discussions that happen within management that don't flow on down to the reporting scientists.
Okay. Well, you don't know of any study of that kind. Okay. Do you accept the desirability of there being documented guidelines for the use of micro-concentration and to what level?
I think that, especially given what's come about in the Commission of Inquiry, it would be good to look at initial quant values, look at post-microcon quant values, and have a look at the DNA profiles that are obtained so we can start to see what types of DNA profiles we're getting from what types of samples, depending on the type of microcon they've been exposed to.
And see what patterns emerge.
Exactly.
And that would help you to make the assessment that you speak of, would it not?
It would help,
and yes. Everyone else.
It would help.
If you go over to page 8, I just want to ask you to clarify some statements in paragraphs 51 and 52. Take your time, but I just want to draw to your attention in paragraph 51, the second sentence. Just have a look at that. And compare that with the second sentence of paragraph 52.
Yes.
You see that in paragraph 51, you've identified that in all cases, you've been able to achieve DNA profiles from DIFP samples that you've submitted.
Yes.
And in paragraph 52, as it reads, uses a different measure.
Yes, I'll clarify. So in my experience, the DIFP samples that I have resubmitted for further testing have all yielded DNA profiles capable of interpretation. So every single sample that I've submitted that was DIFP to start with has resulted in a DNA profile that was able to be interpreted. That might, if you go on from there, sorry, I'll just take you back to that. So with respect to that, it could be a single source DNA profile, a complex mixed DNA profile and suitable for comparison purposes, but we've gotten a DNA profile of some description.
Well, why then in paragraph 52 do you say that that occurred in many such cases as opposed to all being the expression you used in paragraph 51?
Okay, so if in paragraph 52, the word being repeated there, interpretable, if that was better, I could have chosen a better word there, which would have meant able to be compared.
So is the distinction between 51 and 52 that in 51 you're saying that all of the DIFP samples that you've resubmitted that have been reworked, all of them have yielded a profile that can be looked at in an attempt to interpret it?
Yes.
And in 52, you're saying that many of these profiles were able to be interpreted?
Yes.
Some of them were not able to be interpreted, but all of them gave you something that you could look at in an attempt to interpret it.
That's correct. Yes. Yes.
The spreadsheet that you produced, it's exhibit 2. I won't take you to it. but you recall the spreadsheet that you've been compiling. I just want to understand the status of that. Does that simply record some examples and some results that you've obtained?
Yes.
Not all such results?
No, not all.
Okay. And you couldn't give us any data on what proportion that spreadsheet represents of samples that you've submitted?
No, sorry.
Okay. I want to ask you then if we could move to your second statement, which is Exhibit 62. Commence with paragraph 8, and I'll just give you a moment just to orient yourself to that paragraph.
So did you say statement?
It's the statement which is numbered 0012.0028.0001. It's the...
Your second statement.
Thank you.
You're dealing with the scenario when you're asked to prepare a statement. And do I understand correctly that in the course of that, you will review all work that's previously been done?
Yes.
And that would include results which were reported for samples forming part of the case. And is it the case that the likelihood is that the previous efforts to interpret samples will have been done by another scientist and not by the person who's called upon to do the statement?
Well, I understand it that often my line manager and the other reporting line manager will often try to allocate statements to people sometimes. If it's a large case, if they go into that case and they can see, for example, that I had been the scientist who had done the case management of 50 out of the 70 samples, then they will allocate that case to me so that that process that you just described isn't the case.
So there's some strategy to try to minimise the amount of double handling. Is that what you're saying?
There is some strategies, yes.
Okay. Because otherwise there is simply double handling, isn't it?
Yes.
In fact, it's more than that. For the original results, there will be an interpretation plus a peer review, so that's two. And then when you come along to review, you have to get your assessment reviewed by someone else. So there's four people who look at things.
Potentially for every...
Yes, paragraph 105 and 106 relates to the approval process for reworks. You recall the evidence you gave about that?
Yes.
Now, accepting that the subject or that the occurrence of reworks and this process of getting approval to undertake the rework, which might in due course lead to an incorrect.
I believe that process that we have to get the managing scientist's authorization to rework came about as a result of police having concerns over the incorrects that were being received at statement stage.
I see. So in that context, it would be understandable, would it not, for the managing scientist to keep an overview by way of this process or something like it of situations that may lead to an incorrect causing police a measure of concern.
But if I'm writing a statement and I don't believe that that result that's been reported is the true and correct result, and I think that I need to rework that sample in order to be satisfied that the true and correct result has been obtained, then I don't think asking the managing scientist for permission is the right way to approach that situation. If scientifically I believe I need to rework that sample to get the best result for that sample and for that case.
Okay. Well, in fairness, I think you said that you'd only used this process once or twice.
A couple of times, yeah.
Okay. And you'd not been refused?
No.
Your colleague, Dr. Marlow, says she's never been refused.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Okay. Do you know of any refusals to any scientist on a rework of this kind?
No, I don't know of any, but then again, this isn't also a topic that I've discussed with people very often either.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner.
Yes. Who's next?
I have no questions.
Yes.
No questions, thank you.
No,
no questions.
Could I ask out of self-interest, Commissioner, what time the Commission proposes to stop for lunch today?
Oh, well, we can stop now if you'd prefer.
I worked through the break this morning and I'd be grateful to stop a little earlier, but I'm going to take over the break in any event.
Yes, I thought you would. So we'll adjourn now.
Thank
until
you.
What time would you like, Mr. Hickey?
I'm in your commission's hour.
1:30?
Thank you.
I'm sorry, 2:30.
Yes.
Gentle 2:30.
If I might,
yes.
Just briefly, we do have another witness to get through this afternoon, if it's possible perhaps to get to 2:15, if the parties are content with that.
Well, we can do that. Are we realistically going to finish? It's Keller. It doesn't sound... Is she going to be much shorter in chief than Ms. Quatermain?
I wouldn't have thought so.
No, so we'd better give Mr. Hickey some time if he needs it.
I don't need any time. I don't need any lengthy lunch hour.
Oh, okay. Well, then 2:15, as you wish. 2:15.
All right.